With reporting from around the world, it's time for Eye on Travel with America's number one frontline travel news journalist, Peter Greenberg. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, Peter Greenberg.
Well, we know I'm not traveling 400,000 miles this year, but it's nice to kind of say it in your dreams. But I'm happy to be with you here, and welcome back. And if you're just joining us, take out your maps, boys and girls. I'll tell you where we're coming from. 40 degrees, 47 minutes north, 73 degrees, 57 minutes west. You guessed it, we're in the bunker right here in New York again, but hoping to travel soon. But in the meantime, you got me talking to you, and you can always talk to me by emailing me, peter@petergreenberg.com, with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it on the air. We're doing that throughout the show. One news item to report before we get to some calls. Earlier this week, and you may remember on the show last week, I was talking about the fact that Hawaii keeps pushing back their opening date, and for all intents and purposes, they're not really going to open up until January. Well, this week, we got a little bit of a shock. Just a few days ago, the governor announced they're going to limit it, open it, the whole state, on October 15th, provided that you have, you know, the proper COVID-19 negative tests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for those people who want to get excited and jump down there and have an aloha moment, remember that aloha doesn't just mean hello, it also means goodbye. And you may not want to be in the first wave only because, remember, we're seeing patterns here, right? Whether it's in the Bahamas, whether it's in Sturgis in South Dakota, and now with Hawaii starting October 15th, about 3 weeks after they open the doors, there tends to be a spike in cases and they shut down again. My feeling is this. If you want to be a smart traveler, go when the infrastructure can support you, when all the hotels and restaurants are open, when all the attractions are open, when all the beaches are open, et cetera, et cetera. And plan your trip for January or February when people can have widespread, reliable, and rapid response testing. But if you do want to go to Hawaii and you want to play by their rules, make sure you find out what those rules are. You have to have a test within 72 hours of arrival. It has to be negative, of course. And you have to sign a declaration form, minimize your interactions, and then you can do it. However, if you take a test within 72 hours of arrival, which, by the way, you have to pay for, they're not doing it at the airport, and the results are still pending, you're not going anywhere for a while. So my advice, based on my own history, is take a deep breath, go rent the old Elvis Presley in Hawaii movie, and then go in January or February. You'll have a much better experience. Well, we'll watch this story because a lot of people in the Hawaii tourism business are very angry at me because they claim I'm trying to end Hawaii tourism. Not even close. What they don't even realize in Hawaii, in the tourism business, is my relatives are Hawaiian. I've been going to Hawaii since 1970. Why? Because my uncle there was there, one of the premier historic surfers. My aunt, Kainui, my cousin Pua, my other cousin Nohea. I go all the time. But you need to go with common sense, and you need to go with a plan. And being in the first wave, that didn't work for Saving Private Ryan either. So we'll talk again next week. We'll obviously monitor this story as we get closer to October 15th. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that date slides again. So we'll watch that for you. Let's go right to the phones. Out there in Washington, Illinois, near Peoria, we got Sue on the phone. Hey, Sue.
Hi, Peter.
How can I help you today?
This spring, I purchased 2 tickets through Expedia on Swiss Air from O'Hare to Zurich. The flight was going to be June 25th. I received an email on May 30th that the flight was canceled. Expedia has told me 3 times this summer that they're, quote, requesting a refund for me. And if you feel it's certain that I will get a refund, I will be patient. But it just seems that if I heard the flight was canceled in May, it seems this is the middle of September. Oh, yeah. And I'm just wondering why this is taking so long.
Well, it's taking so long for 2 reasons. 1, the airlines want to hold on to as much cash as they can. But 2, they're inundated with refund requests. I'm not trying to defend them because they should have gotten you one within 72 hours. Here's what the deal is. Your flight was emanating starting from Chicago. And that means Swiss Air has to be compliant with the DOT rules. That if they cancel a flight that was operating either from or within the United States and they cancel it, then you are entitled to a full refund. Now, you have a couple of choices here. but many of them are not the easiest, because if you're going to dispute the charge on your credit card, you had to do that a lot earlier than now. And a small claims court, you know, well, you got, you know, you have a substantial investment here. How much money are we talking about?
The tickets, the seat choices, and the insurance are over $4,200.
Well, you know what? That's still under the $7,500 cap in small claims court. I know that Swissair has a ticket office in Chicago, and they can be served. Here's what I would do. I'd go back to Expedia, which, by the way, is now being sued. Expedia is now being sued for not refunding money. So they're very sensitive to this. I'd go back to them, and by the way, get names and titles, and you might want to share them with me as an email, and see what they say now, and then I'll get into it for you as well. The last thing you want to do, of course, is go to small claims court, although I guarantee you're going to win, but you don't need me to tell you that now. You want your money back, and you don't want to get stuck. So call them again, but make sure you do a paper trail here. You email them a confirmation of your call with all the names, dates, places, confirmation numbers, and copy me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll let you, and then we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, I'll wait if you're sure that I'll get a refund, and I assumed I would if the flight was canceled, but oddly, my daughter lives in Sweden, and they were going to meet us there. They had their tickets through Swiss Air, and they have already been told they'll get a refund.
Yes, so wait a second. Did they get the money yet?
I don't know, but they saying they're going to get a refund.
Let's find out. Get a hold of that email as well. Everything works in a paper trail, okay? That's what I want you to do. Okay?
Okay.
You got it. Let me know what happens now.
Thank you.
You got it, Sue. Let's go right to Diane, who's in Wilmington, Delaware. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Peter.
How can I help you?
Okay. Well, I know I'm putting you on the spot a bit, but I need help making a decision. Would you take a cruise to Antarctica? Our plan is to fly into Buenos Aires on January 3rd, 2021, spend 2 days there, and then fly down to Ushuaia, get on a ship there, and then cruise to Antarctica for 9 nights. So,
okay, so I got questions.
Assuming a healthy you.
Okay, I'm going to give you a question here. What ship?
Okay.
What's the name of the ship?
It's Le Lyrial through Abercrombie.
Okay. Have you had conversations with Abercrombie as to whether the ship's even going to operate?
Right now, they say yes, it is. Right now.
Well, being scheduled to operate and actually operating are two different things. The good news is, it's not emanating from the United States, so they're not under the CDC controls.
Okay.
And it's a smaller ship. We know that. So my guess is you should go. It's the perfect time of the year to go. It's the best time when you take a look at the limited time window that you have to sail in the Antarctic every year. And if you're going to Ushuaia, I talked about this last week, one of the best restaurants I've ever eaten at in the world is actually in Ushuaia.
Yeah,
you heard that last week,
that.
Right?
Yeah, I did. That was good.
So what I would do with Abercrombie is find out from them, number one, if it's confirmed that it's sailing, number two, what their refund policies are, and number three, when you get that, copy me, okay?
Yes, I will. Okay.
But I hope you get a chance to go. It's
a
once-in-a-lifetime deal, and it was the highlight of my travel experience as well. Thanks, Diane. That music means we're out of time for this segment, but stick around. We come back. Our good pal Arnie Weissman from Travel Weekly, and later, the International Center of Photography. How many pictures were posted of people dealing with a pandemic? It's a wild story.
Your flight might be late, but we're on time. Eye on Travel will be right back. Now, back to Eye on Travel.
It's 42 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you as Eye on Travel continues on this third weekend of September 2020. You can always reach me, Peter at petergreenberg.com, with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. In fact, let's go right to the phones, way out to that distant location known as Aurora, Illinois. We've got Linda on the phone. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Peter.
So how can I help you?
Okay, so we were going to spend 3 days in Amsterdam before going on a cruise. Because of the virus, we were concerned about traveling, and eventually our cruise was canceled. Delta did not cancel the August 14th flight from O'Hare to Amsterdam, even though U.S. citizens were not allowed in the EU due to the virus. Our travel agent did get us a voucher for the full amount from Delta, And because the flight had been not canceled by the airline, she was not able to get a cash refund. I decided to call Delta, and the agent said we were entitled to a refund, minus a $289 charge. He sent an email to me and said that my credit card would be charged immediately, but it would take a few months before Delta refunded the full amount. Within an hour of receiving that email, the Delta agent called and said we were not entitled to a refund because we were marked as no-shows. Our travel agent emailed proof that she had canceled us from the flight. I then spoke with a manager at Delta, and she says, it doesn't matter, we're not entitled to a refund because the flight had not been canceled. And I'm just wondering, do we have any recourse, or should we be happy with the voucher?
Well, nobody's ever really happy with a voucher, but the reality is the airline did not cancel the flight, they operated it.
Under those terms,
you'll get the voucher, you won't get a refund. Now, here's the real kicker. How valid is the voucher? When does it expire?
It's for 2 years, September 22.
Oh, you know what? If it's for 2 years, here's what I want you to do, Linda. Say, thank you for the voucher.
Okay.
And pick a place you want to go.
Okay, I'll do that.
I'm serious. At this point, be thankful for small favors on that one, because that was a lose-lose all the way. But at least you got the voucher. Use it, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Anytime, Linda. Now let's go to the phones out to La Quinta, California, which is now very hot and toasty, according to Bill. Hello, Bill.
Good afternoon, or good evening, or whatever it is.
You got it, Bill. How can I help you?
Well, in January, we booked a trip. We were looking forward to going to Europe, and the flight, we had no problem getting a refund of going over there. But then we had also the second leg. We were going to travel from Greece to Mallorca via Barcelona. Well, that was all fine, except all of a sudden, this is going to be in like May 31st, Spain went through a big lockdown. You couldn't go there, and also the airline canceled the flight. So I figured I'd call them, and that's what you said to do, advised to do, was to talk to somebody, get the name of the person, and find out something about him. So I did. So I went on the phone and tried to phone them. They wouldn't answer the phone. What they did was put me in and said, you got to go to the website. Well, I went to their website, and the website did not have anything on the website where you could actually cancel and get a refund. All they would offer on the website was a voucher. What's your take on that? Do I have any possible recourse at this point?
Well, what you're looking for is a refund from a European airline for flights that were only within the European continent, correct?
That is correct.
And that's where you have a problem, because they're not under the U.S. Department of Transportation rules. That only applies to airlines operating in the U.S. Now, there are European Union rules, but they're not really being well enforced. How much money are we talking about here, Bill?
About $700.
All right, but they gave you a voucher. When is it good for?
1 year.
1 year from when you bought the ticket, or 1 year from when you were supposed to fly?
Good question. I didn't look into that. Usually it's 1 year from when you bought the ticket.
I know, and that means it's going to be expiring soon. So here's the thing. We're now banned by the European Union to go there as U.S. citizens for a while. I don't see that opening up before the end of the year. And when did you actually buy the ticket?
January 29th.
Woo, you're in the gray area here. What I would do, just to protect yourself, see if you can use that voucher to book a flight in mid-January, just for giggles. And then if you can, maybe then you can get them to extend the validity of the ticket. But you got to get something on paper as a ticket so that you have some record. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, although it's not a great outcome from what you're telling me.
No, it's not. But look, here's the deal. You're going to try to beat them at their own game playing by their rules. So go ahead, exchange that voucher for a ticket in January before it expires, and then make your case at that point. Okay?
Is there any kind of fare level that I should get for that ticket?
It's the actual voucher amount. That's it. Bill, I got to cut you off, but let me know what happens. That music means we're going to come back right after this with a really interesting visit to the Center for International Center Photography in New York and what they have on exhibit now. Wild stuff.
Your flight might be late, but we're on time. Eye on Travel will be right back. with reporting from around the world. It's time for Eye on Travel with America's number one frontline travel news journalist, Peter Greenberg. And now, from the Sokolov Law home studios in New York and around the world, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back aboard Eye on Travel for this third weekend in September 2020. Of course, we can always reach me at Peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll answer it right here on the air. And if you're just joining us, you want to know where we are? Okay, get out those maps, boys and girls. This should be a no-brainer for the regular listeners. 40 degrees, 47 minutes north, 73 degrees, 57 minutes west. We hope to change those coordinates soon. But for the moment, we're still in the bunker right here in New York City. And, of course, talking to you about all the breaking news in global travel. So many things to talk about. And one of them is, when you take a look at what's going on in the airline business right now, an $84 billion loss this year globally, with the recovery not expected till 2024, not a good idea. But there is some good news. Look, a lot of airlines are going to be canceling routes, but JetBlue is adding routes, and so is Southwest, which is unusual, but they are. So that's a good thing. Here's something else you need to be on top of. You know what the average price of the number of times the price of a ticket changed last year before the pandemic? How many times the airlines went in there and adjusted the price of a ticket for any ticket in a week? 59 times. And every time they did it, on average, it resulted either in a 25% rise in price or a 25% drop in price. Well, guess what? That's not happening now. What's happening now is they can't control pricing. So they're just throwing whatever fare they think they can get out there. So it's a buyer's market for most of you if you plan ahead. And now that the airlines have gotten rid of those draconian ticket change fees, it's a buyer's market for you. While the passenger numbers, in terms of numbers of passengers screened by the TSA, has not really risen dramatically, it's still hovering at around 900,000 versus the 2.7 million it should be every day. Here's a piece of sobering news. The number of gun seizures by the TSA at airports around the United States has tripled. Eesh. Anyway, we'll talk about that. Hey, the other thing is this. I mentioned that Southwest is adding flights. They're adding cities. They're adding two. Southwest normally in a given year only adds maybe one every 2 years. This year, in the midst of the pandemic, they're adding two, so three cheers to them. The first city that I never thought they'd ever fly into, but they're now going to do it, is Miami. For those of you who've flown Southwest to Florida, you know they mostly fly to everything else but Miami, especially Fort Lauderdale. And the other route that they're adding, which comes as a surprise, but they're doing it, is Palm Springs in California. And what a coincidence. I've got Constance on the phone from Palm Springs. Hey, Constance.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. How can I help you today?
Well, I'm going in November to, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, to Guayaquil or Guayaquil in Ecuador.
Okay, I'm going to tell you how to pronounce it. I'm going to tell you how to pronounce it. It's Guayaquil. Oh. Guayaquil.
Guayaquil.
Guayaquil. Okay. Yep. Go ahead. Okay, keep going.
I'm leaving out of Palm Springs to LAX via Panama. What I want to know, Peter, do I have to do anything in LA or Panama, or will I wait till I get to Ecuador to go through customs?
The good news is you're going to wait till you get to Ecuador to go through customs. And the same thing applies on the way back, because you're not stopping the trip in Panama and going into Panama City. You're just changing planes. So the bags will connect, and you will get your bags in Guayaquil, or on the way back, you'll get them back in Palm Springs. However, on the way back, it's a little bit different. On the way back, you're going to have to get your bags in L.A. And then what you do is, once you clear customs, you put them right back on the belt, and they go right to Palm Springs.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering, Peter. Okay, gosh, that's such a big help.
No, you'll be fine. As long as your connect times are decent, I hope they are. I hope they're more than 90 minutes, you'll be fine.
Well, they're not. I'm flying out on Copa Airlines. Hopefully, Ricky Ricardo's not the pilot. But I'm flying out there, and then there's another airline, Republic, I don't have it in front of me. But I only have about an hour in Panama to connect going into Guayaquil.
Well, I will tell you this. Copa Airlines is a remarkably well-organized airline. They really do a great job. They use Panama City, Panama as their hub. If you want to go from Los Angeles to Jamaica, you can fly on Copa with a real quick connection there to Jamaica. So they really have a great system. And the airport's not out of control in terms of size. So you should be able to make your connection. But here's what I want you to do, though. But here's what I want you to do. And most people don't do it. When you get to the gate for your connecting flight from Panama to Guayaquil, you're going to have your baggage tags there, which are going to have a barcode on them. Take them out and go to the gate agent and say, can you please check to see that these bags have been loaded on this flight?
In Panama, I do that, right, Peter?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can also do it. You can also do it in LA before you get on the plane.
Oh, thank you for the advice. Holy cow, that's great.
Okay. And by the way, if they say they can't check, they're lying. If they say I can't do it, then say, listen, can you just call the guys on the, you know, the ground surface guys and give them the tag numbers? They'll know because they're scanning them. And you'll know and you'll get on the plane at least.
Thank you for the heads up. I will do that. Yes.
You got it. And have fun in Palm Springs, okay? And you're about to get Southwest Airlines now, too.
Yes, we are. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Constance, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Peter, thank you so much, and I'll keep listening.
You got it. That was Constance in Palm Springs. By the way, many people forget, and by the way, I was guilty of this myself, but anytime you're making a connecting flight, you owe it to yourself to go to the gate agent at your connecting flight gate and show them the bag tags with the barcode and say, can you just scan this and make sure it's on the plane? I remember a story that happened to me last year. I was in Porto connecting to Lisbon, and I went to the gate agent and asked her if she could do it, and she said no. She just had an attitude problem. And I said, well, you know what? Get me the supervisor. And she didn't want to get me the supervisor, but this is a plane you had to board from the tarmac with portable stairs. So the minute I got on the tarmac, I didn't board. I waited till somebody came over to me to tell me to get on the plane. That was the supervisor. I showed him the boarding the barcodes on the tickets. He checked, and I'm glad he did, because you know where my bags were? They were literally on another tug about 40 feet ahead of the plane, and they were never going to make the plane. In fact, what they did, because it was late, they literally grabbed the bags and loaded them into the passenger cabin so we could actually make it. So assumption is the mother of all screw-ups. You've now heard about that from me. Remember, anytime you are connecting a flight, no matter what the airline, no matter what the connecting time, always ask to see that they're loaded on your connecting flight, and you'll be okay. By the way, when we come back, everybody's a cynic these days, right? Well, we're going to talk to the author of an amazing book, The Function of Cynicism at the Present Time, Helen Small. She's actually in England right now, and we're going to get her thoughts on, is it really appropriate behavior to be a cynic? I know I am, so I can't wait to talk to her. Back with more of Eye on Travel right after this. Or if you want to be a cynic, then don't come back. But
your flight might be late, but we're on time. Eye on Travel will be right back. Been listening to Eye on Travel with Peter Greenberg. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com for more information and sign up for our newsletter. Eye on Travel is a CBS Audio Network production.
It's 52 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you as Eye on Travel continues on this third weekend of September 2020. You can always reach me. Just email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. Let's go right to the phones out in LaGrange, Illinois. We've got Susan on the phone. Hey, Susan.
Hello, Peter.
How can I help you?
Well, recently I planned a trip to Florida, and I called Priceline to rent a car. However, shortly after I made the reservations, I realized that I would have to cancel due to the increase in the COVID-19 in Florida. And then the next morning, less than 24 hours later, I did call Priceline to cancel the reservation. And because of the unique situation with the virus, I wondered if they would make an exception to their cancellation policy. I explained the issue to the man at Priceline, and he said he would check into it. He put me on hold for 20 minutes, only to tell me that nothing could be changed. It could not be canceled. And I asked to speak to a manager, and then he put me on hold again for 10 more minutes, only to tell me that there was no one that I could talk to, and he wouldn't allow a change in the reservation or even offer a credit. He suggested that I call Hertz directly, and Hertz said that they had no way to cancel or offer a credit for future use since I didn't directly work with them. And it all
you know
to
what?
Be done
yeah.
through Priceline.
That's right. I mean, that's how Hertz plays the game. Everybody. By the way, if you use Priceline or any of the opaque travel sites to book hotels, they'll tell you the same thing. You didn't book it through them. It's got to come through the actual agent that booked it. In this case, you booked a non-refundable car rental, didn't you?
Yes, I didn't realize that either.
Because you were driven by price and not by policy, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I know. Mm-hmm. So how much money are we talking about here?
$197.
Okay. So now what you're going to do is you're going to take yourself out to dinner, spend $197, and say, I've learned my lesson. In this situation, you don't really have much of a recourse. The only thing you could have done is challenge the bill on your credit card, but you need to do that much earlier than now.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know what?
So that would be within 24 hours, too?
No. The credit card, you have about 60 days from the time you wanted to dispute the bill, or 120 days from the time you learned that you wouldn't be, you know, that you couldn't use the car. But you're way beyond the 120 days now, aren't you?
No. This was all the beginning of September.
Oh, my goodness.
August 31st, I think, was when we made the reservation. And
okay. Then here's
canceled
the deal.
It the next day.
Then you know what to do. Dispute it on your credit card bill. Make sure you give them all the information, not just the credit card number, but the confirmation number of the rental car. And you can also copy me. Let's see what happens, okay?
Oh, okay.
Now, you may get it denied, but it's worth a shot, okay?
Great. Yes, I will try that.
Then let me know what happens, Susan. I really appreciate the call. Let's go to Jonathan right now, who's somewhere near me in New York. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my question.
Well, tell me what we can do.
Well, I wanted to check on the most dates regarding risks of travel to Greece with, obviously, an American passport. I do have friends with Swedish passports. I've had no problem. But multiple websites point to CDC COVID data, putting Greece at the CDC risk level of 3 with the imprecise reconsider label.
Right.
The European CDC also indicates Greece as an extreme risk with an advisory index of 3.5. But my issue is it possible the COVID threat in Greece may be slanted by data from neighboring regions and within Greece, such as Attica or central Greece? And are the gorgeous islands, including Mykonos, being shortchanged by skewed data?
I have a problem. Here's the deal. I've got a problem with a lot. It's not the CDC level. It's the State Department level. And the State Department has 4 levels, right? 1 is travel with normal caution. 2 is travel with increased caution, whatever that means. Level 3 is the one that you're talking about, reconsider travel, at which point you're digging a hole in the backyard and looking for shelter. And level 4 is do not travel. Almost all of those levels, even if they're well-intentioned by the State Department, paint with an extremely broad brush. And you know, if they're having a riot in Cincinnati, that's not going to stop me from going to Cleveland, but under State Department criteria, it would. And so your issue right now, forgetting the level of warnings they're giving you, is you have a U.S. passport. You can't go anyway.
Correct.
However, the question that you ask is a very good one, Jonathan, because it calls into question something that was already a problem before the pandemic. How did the State Department come up with these numbers, how they come up with their criteria, and are they really hurting a lot of people by just basically giving everybody more fear than they deserve? So I'm a big fan, by the way, of look at the British Foreign Office recommendations to their citizens. I actually think they do a better job. Check out the British Foreign Office recommendations and travel advisories, then they're easily available online. Okay? Jonathan, thank you so much for your call. As always, that music means we're out of time for the whole show. Oh, my goodness. Got a people thank. We got, of course, Dara Stone, our chief producer, Alessandra B., and the magician of all magicians, Jeff Ryder, doing the boards for us in Connecticut. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week from another location around the world. Here's a hint. Probably going to be New York at least one more week. See you next week, everybody.
You've been listening to Eye on Travel with Peter Greenberg. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com for more information and sign up for our newsletter. Eye on Travel is a CBS Audio Network production.